Welcome, everyone, to Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. Tonight we have a friend of mine that I met last weekend when I was traveling to Kansas City to the Psychic Research Institute, and I think he has an interesting story that you'll enjoy hearing. We have with us Duane Benton tonight. How are you, Duane?
I'm fine. A little out of breath.
Sorry about that. Didn't mean to make you run around all over the place. So why don't you, before we get started, you know, usually I have scientists on my show with this long PhD in scientific research that they have to tell us about, but give us a little background about, you know, where you are and what you do, and just a little bit about so people know who you are.
Well, I live in one of the tiniest cities in Kansas, Westwood Hills, and it's right next to Kansas City, Missouri proper, and this is where I grew up, and as a kid, I was a kind of a dreamer and a fantasizer, and I became an architect briefly, and then my wife and I started a little candle business, which was something that she wanted, and I closed my practice to do that and enjoyed it and never went back to practicing. So we manufactured candles.
What was your practice?
Architectural.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was right in Kansas City.
Do you still do those candles? Curious.
Well, we sold the candle business a few years ago, and we're basically retired.
Good for you. Good for you. So what happened was today I had, Duane had asked me to do a medical intuitive reading for him, and I don't know why, because he certainly doesn't have many things wrong with him. And I have to say, when I met this man last weekend, I thought he was about 50 years old, and he told me that he was 78. I almost fell out of my chair. He's doing something right in his life. But anyway, we got to talking, and instead of getting medical intuitive information, I heard, ask him about his life, Eva. He has something interesting to tell you. So I did. And here's what he told me. Why don't you tell my listeners what you told me this morning, Duane? It's an interesting story.
Well, where you want to begin?
Anywhere you want.
Well, one of the first really amazing and meaningful experiences for me was when I was about 21. I almost died of pneumonia, and had a fever of 107, and I was iced down, and I was feeling very very calm and peaceful, and went to sleep, and then I found myself in a kind of an awake space, and a voice calmly asked me, "Do you wish to live? And if so, for what?" And my sweetheart had just broken up with me, and I was kind of despondent, but it was almost like I'd been asked if I wanted chocolate or ice cream, or chocolate or vanilla. It was that level, and I thought to myself, well, yes, and for architecture. And with that, I was briefly asleep, and I guess, and then I found myself in what appeared to be just a dark void. I couldn't see anything, and I didn't have a body. I was a little bewildered, but I thought about it. I realized I could see, and I could think, and so I started looking around me. And as I looked around, way off in the distance, maybe miles away in what still appeared to be the darkness, I could see some masses that were just carbon black. And they interested me, and it was almost like using a zoom lens on a camera. My interest in those caused me to move closer to them. And so while that was happening, I I got nervous about my body. And but I should say that as I looked around in this apparent darkness, I started realizing that I was not in darkness at all, but rather I was in all light. But there was nothing for the light to fall upon and become perceivable. But anyway, the moment that I thought about my body, I was back in it, and everything changed. My body, I was back in my sick body. So that was my first really powerful experience of this nature.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because I want the listeners to really understand what that was. Do you know what that was? And I know we had this conversation today, but for my listeners, let's kind of go over it again because it's really interesting. Do you have an idea of what that was that you were experiencing?
Not really.
You know, my perception of it is, because I think we talked about this, I had one of those experiences one time, and it's what it feels like in non-duality. You know, when you're, that's how God feels. I mean, it doesn't have a body, but it sees everything, but there are no eyes to see with, but it still sees. I don't know how to describe that, but I know you know what I'm talking
mm-hmm.
about. And I believe that you had that non-dual experience so that you were that one with everything. Do you think that? Have you pondered that?
In some ways I have through the years. It was one of the most peaceful places I've ever been, I know that. There was no evidence to me of any other living thing. I I've referred to it as a void, but there was just nothing there.
So do you think you could have had any emotion or feeling, or was it more like being an observation from a third-party perspective, like we were just watching?
Well, I was fascinated by everything that was happening. It was so unlike anything I'd ever experienced. But I was not afraid.
Interesting. And had you, what did you do with that when you came back?
Well,
how did it affect your life?
I think that it had to change something within me. For one thing, I realized not only how close I had come to going over the other side, but there was nothing fearful or frightful about that. It was like I say, like the difference between vanilla and chocolate ice cream. You make your choice, and it's as simple as that.
It doesn't hurt either, does it?
No, oh no.
Did it make you realize that there was no pain in dying?
Yes, it did. I didn't experience pain until I came back into my poor body.
Yeah, exactly. It's like suddenly, totally, everything's gone and there's nothing but bliss. You know, I think something that's important to remember there is when I believe, or that from my experience that I had, I believe that when you die, you take over with you whatever emotion that you're experiencing. So if you're experiencing a lot of hate or you know, bad things that you've experienced in your life, where so that you carry around that baggage, it will go with you. Because the only thing that happens really is your body drops away. Everything else still seems the same, doesn't it? You still think the same way. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes,
the way the thinking process occurs, it doesn't change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep.
The only physical body leaves.
Yep. It was like I was a little point in space.
Uh-huh.
But wherever I directed my thoughts to, that was what I perceived.
Now, let's move back to the rest of your life. Had you ever had any dark nights of the soul, and How did this change your perception about how you viewed the world?
Well,
and lived your life.
I think that an experience like this must transform us somewhat. You can't think the way you did before, or perceive things the way you did before.
Why not?
Well, because you've seen something you hadn't seen before. There's some realizations, I guess. Again, there was this wonderful sense of quiet. Hard to describe, but and as I said before, there was nothing fearsome.
What about, you were telling me about an experience that you were looking at a spiral.
Oh, yes. In 1998, my wife and I at that stage of the game owned four businesses, and we needed to move them to a new location, and found a building and set about rehabbing it. And I decided that I'd be my own architect, and I'd grown up in construction, so I'd be my own contractor. And the short of it is that I finally tackled something I couldn't handle. There, I just took on more than I could do, and I went into a deep depression and was hospitalized, and medications couldn't bring me around, so I was given what they called electroconvulsive therapy, which I referred to later as shock therapy. I agreed to that because I wanted to be healed, and it took me a while to agree to it, but once I did, I agreed totally, because I didn't want to revisit the decision each time. And there were 35 treatments or so over a period of a year. And about 6 months into that, I suffered amnesia, and you know, all of a sudden, I was just standing there, and I didn't know my name. When I looked around in my head, I didn't know anything else, and I was at the graduation of one of my grandsons from grade school, and it was similar to what I said a while ago. There was nothing fearsome about it. It's just that this was some new reality for me. But shortly after that...
Let me ask you a question here.
What, dear?
I've always kind of wondered about this. When you did it, you had no memory whatsoever?
None.
Anything?
No.
Nothing.
I was with my wife and our daughter and her family, and I knew who they were, and nothing changed except that I didn't know anything. And
did you remember like their childhoods or anything?
I didn't remember anything.
Did you remember their names?
Oh yes, because I was with them, and they were talking, etc. They had no idea what had just happened to me. I didn't look any different. I didn't say anything about it. I just went along with them, and tried to fathom what was going on in my head, or not going on in my head.
Did you know who you were?
I was my wife's husband and my daughter's father.
Interesting.
But at that stage of the game, I didn't know much else.
Did you think about let's just use, I call it source, but people call it God. Did you think about God? Did you remember what you thought about what your belief systems were?
No, I don't think I did, because, again, I didn't feel threatened. You know, when I checked my sense of being, I was still Duane. By this stage of the game, I learned my name, but when this first happened, the way I realized that I lost my memory was that in the back of my head, I heard myself reciting names and saying, "No, that's not it. You know, it's not Bob, it's not John," and I thought, "What is this? Why don't I know my name?"
That's amazing.
But our name is one thing. It has something to do, I guess, with our identity, with people around us. But our sense of self is some kind of a core thing, I guess. But I was still me was the point. Regardless of what name I had or didn't have, I was me. And I was okay.
Did you still have the same likes and dislikes?
What, dear?
Did you still have the same likes and dislikes and still tend to move in the same routines that you did, even though you didn't realize it?
I suppose. I still had a lot of responsibilities when we got back to Kansas City. Because we had construction going on, et cetera, by this time. And I was trying, even though I was still getting the shock therapy on a weekly basis, I was still participating in the construction on the building we were preparing. And one day I was in my office, and I'd been trying to work at my drafting table, and my hands had begun to shake during this period, and I'd lost my ability to really conceptualize, and for an architect and a designer, that's a real loss. But I could not build a thought in my mind. If I would try to leave track A to get some information off track B, I couldn't get back from track B to track A. I didn't even know what I was looking for, and I had no idea what the piece of information I'd gone on track B was to be used for. And until one day, I managed to get a little blip of information back to track A. And that was the beginning of starting to reconstruct that ability. And so, as I started saying a minute ago, one day in my office, as I turned from my drafting table to walk across the office, and there were people on the phones and things going on, this incredible feeling of gratitude and joy washed through me, and it was like spring water on a parched soul. I hadn't felt anything so beautiful as this for months. My feelings had been dark and negative, and I just stopped where I was, and the people in the office were kind enough to just ignore me standing there with my eyes closed and tears running down my cheeks, and they left me alone. And so with my eyes closed, I could see it was like a blank screen. And across the middle of it, horizontally, there was kind of like an invisible line, but it was like a threshold line. And below it was darkness, and above it was light. And I saw a spiral that reached from down low and spiraled up, and it crossed that line and it went on up. And then below the line, I saw a little blip. And that little blip was slowly moving up, and I saw it cross that threshold line. And when it did, I had this incredible feeling that at last I was empowered to participate in my own healing. And I realized that that little blip on that spiral was me. And I watched it continue to rise up a little ways farther. And then I realized that it was up to me to stay above that threshold line. I knew what the darkness was below, and I didn't want to go back there. And so I watched that little blip, and I realized that negative energy would take it back down the spiral, and that it was up to me to recognize when I had negative feelings that I had to drop them immediately and spin around and turn myself to the positive. However attached I was to that negativity, I had to let it go, or it would take me back down. That was in June or July of 1998, and that has become a way of life for me. I, of course, like everybody else, I go up and down the spiral a ways, but I've managed to stay above that line.
I'm curious, which way was the point of the spiral? Was it directed upward or downward?
Oh, the spiral.
Was it like an upside down tornado?
No, it was just a spiral line. A spiral that was vertical, and it crossed that threshold line, which
so it
was,
wasn't in the shape of a cone, say.
Like a what?
A cone.
A cone.
Like a vortex.
It was just a beautiful spiral. It was a fine line.
Oh, a straight line.
It was a curved line that spiraled up. And at one point it passed through that threshold.
Because the interesting thing about that to me, I have a friend that's an aerophysicist, and we had a conversation one time, and he was talking to me about when you go to sleep, just before you get to sleep, sometimes you feel like you're spiraling just before you kind of go out.
Mm-hmm.
And also when people have out-of-body experiences, they report feeling like they're in a spiral, kind of. And I see, I lost my train of thought here. How is it going to make this cohesive?
But that's with the spirals.
Yeah, it goes like the, what you know, because the universe spins. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it makes kind of a vortex, and we know that energies, as they go up that spiral of that vortex to the top point, the higher they go, the higher the frequency it is. And
mm-hmm.
we know that, you know, David Hawkins' work that he talks about in Power versus Force, he uses those numbers that I told you about. You know, it goes 0 to 100, 101 to 200, 201, all the way to the 1,000. But when you get to that midway threshold, that 500 point, something happens, and people have spontaneous enlightenments, because they usually don't go but two or three points in a lifetime, but occasionally there's people like you that have a spontaneous enlightenment, and it's right there at, what did you call that line?
The threshold?
Yeah, the threshold. So that's really interesting to me how that happened to you, and it fits in with everything that science says, as well as Hawkins' work. And the mystics and the philosophers. It's obvious that you had some kind of spiritual epiphany that went on there. Had you been seeking? Had you been on this path of seeking some greater thing, that because religion wasn't filling it, and had you been looking for something and not knowing what it was?
Oh, I think that we all in our higher aspirations feel that, but I've basically always just enjoyed my life and what I'm doing and the people who are around me. I like being here.
I just think, do you have any reason why it happened?
Well, it was an awakening for me, certainly, as to the fact that it was up to me to control my emotions and stay on a positive path.
How long after that happened did it accelerate your recovery process after it happened?
Yes, because then I could truly join forces with everybody around me. You know, my the love of my family, the doctors who had helped me, and continued to, because for another 6 months after that, I continued to get the shock therapy.
Why? Was the depression still there?
With what, dear?
I'm curious. Was the depression still there after that happened?
Well, you know, depression was so far from a reality in my life that when this happened to me, I had to write the word depression in my little pocket calendar. So when somebody, some friend would ask me what had happened, I'd quick like open that up and I'd say, I had depression. I didn't really feel any different from the way I did before, but now I was coming out of that darkness, and I popped out of that darkness, and now I could work with my doctors to get myself not only back to what we call normal, but hopefully to a better normal than I'd had before.
You know, you just made me think of something that's really interesting. A lot of people, I have problems with depression on a regular basis. Well, I used to. I think within the past year I've kind of learned how to step back and observe it. But a lot of people would say, oh, you had that experience of that epiphany occur to you and you had bliss. So if that's true, how can you experience depression? But you can have the bliss and the depression at the same time, can't you?
Yes, because in my case, you continue to be who you are.
Yeah. It's really hard to describe, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't really know how to describe. So how did the people that you know accept what had happened? Did they understand it?
It made them sad, and everybody was so loving. That all went together to help support me, and in fact to feed me until I could begin to support myself. I think that it was the love of family and friends and employees and business associates, all of that buoyed me up, and I believe that that is what lifted me up to that threshold point. That powered me up to there. After that, yes, that was still there, but it was up to me to do my part.
I'm curious. I would like for my readers, my listeners, to understand your degree of depression, because I want them to understand that even though it can be as terrible, and I want them to be able to relate, I want it to give them hope. So tell them how you felt when you had that depression.
Well,
because you know it means different things to different people.
Well, in my case, I had four businesses to run. I had this construction going on, and I had I had set unrealistic goals for myself, unrealistic expectations. The failure to achieve them was the beginnings of a feeling of defeat, which I had never felt in my whole life, other than on minor things. But it was like everything that I'd been building was threatened. I became very anxious. I was unable to sleep. I'd work at my dining table making drawings of things that we'd try to build the next day and wait for morning to come so I could get the construction people back to get something accomplished. None of that was going as fast as it had to. And I started doing silly things. My house is kind of funny. It's got beams that go back and forth in different directions. And my daughter said, "Dad, you would jump up in the air and take hold of a beam and just swing on it, silently swing on it with your mind off elsewhere." And of course, I don't remember that stuff. But so my wife and our son and pardon me.
It's okay.
One of my dear friends all prevailed upon me to go to the hospital. And so that was the beginning of an opportunity to change and heal.
Did it put you to bed? Did it make you have suicidal tendencies?
Well, I don't remember that. But my wife said that I was suicidal.
So, from the experience that you had, what, you know, not everybody's going to have a spiritual epiphany, but what can you tell them to give them hope? To how to, rather than going to get shock therapy, what can you tell them?
Well, I'm no expert on any of this. And
you
everybody's,
got well, honey.
But everybody's situation is different. And I would say to listen to your loved ones and listen to your doctors and take their guidance.
Did you recognize what you had as being depression? Did you recognize as being that when it first happened before people started telling you?
No. No, I knew is I had this terrible anxiety and fear and all that because things were not going in such a way as that we were going to get our businesses moved and keep them alive. And by that stage of the game, our businesses were almost 40 years old, and a lot of people depended upon them for their livelihoods.
Wow. And was the depression something that came in an instant, or was it kind of gradual over time?
You're asking, was it gradual?
Mm-hmm.
It surely was.
The reason I ask these questions is because a lot of people have this problem, but they're in. You know, you can't see the forest for the trees when you're in it, so I'm hoping to give them some things to recognize.
Well, in my case, it was anxiety and fear of failure,
and sleep problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I later learned the doctor who helped me with the shock therapy later told me that the thing that had put me in the hospital was lack of sleep, and he said the brain cannot manufacture serotonin when you're awake. He said you have to sleep. And he said, I prescribe 8 hours of sleep per night to you as the foundation of your cure. And I have done my best to do that every night, to get a full night's sleep. 'Cause without it, you lose the you know more about serotonin than I do, probably, Eva. But it's called, you know, like the feel good drug, which is manufactured, I guess, by in the pineal gland of the brain, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it can't do it when we're awake. It can't do it when we're anxious. It can only do its work while we're asleep.
Any other advice that you can give them?
Well, besides staying close to their loved ones, work at keeping a good sleep regimen.
What about after you had your epiphany and you woke up knowing different things than you knew the night before or the moment before? How did your family accept that, or your friends? Did they understand? And how did you feel? Did you feel different, like you didn't fit in? Or tell me about that. How did that affect your life and how you viewed yourself in the world? And how were you viewed by others?
Well, my friends and associates, family, were all glad to see me making progress. I wasn't allowed to drive a car for a year until the shock therapy was over and my doctor felt that it was okay again. Anything like that. But there were a lot of things that I still couldn't do. For one thing, I didn't suddenly get my memory back. Anything I wanted to know, I had to learn from scratch. Old friends would walk in to see me, and they'd come in smiling and arms out for a hug, and I'd hug them, and then I because I knew I loved them, but I didn't have a clue as to who they were. And I learned quickly to tell them, this is going to sound silly to you, but I don't know your name.
Did you recognize a resonance within them, or just nothing at all?
Oh, I could feel them. I could feel their love, and I could feel my love for them. It's just that I didn't have anything in my conscious mind that would connect to that person.
Interesting.
No details. Only the feeling of love.
That's amazing. How did they react?
Nobody smacked me. Usually they just hugged me again and not press me, because I didn't know anything.
How about your work? How did you deal with that?
Well, it's funny. I'd set up a drafting table in the building that we were rehabbing, and every day, that was my base of operation. My wife Nancy kept the business is running. Our employees, some of whom had worked for us for 20 years or more, knew their jobs. They were all loyal. I didn't know what to ask them to do because I didn't really know much about what they did. Somebody asked me to make a business decision. It had to do with production, and I asked them, what's this for? And they said the name of the business, and I said, what's that? And they said, well, that's a business you own. And I said, well, how have you guys been handling this, you know, while I was in the hospital? And they said, well, we do this and we do that. And I said, then I want you to continue to do what you know how to do. And I'm going to try to learn this business again. But in the beginning of that conversation, I didn't even know that such a business existed. And it was something I'd founded, and it was built on products that I designed, and so on.
That's just amazing. So did it gradually come back, or did it just come back in an instant?
No, it was gradual. I found out right away that the one thing I could trust was my feelings. So if somebody approached me and I felt that I could trust them or that I couldn't trust them. Whatever the feeling was, I would make note of that and then watch.
Did you carry around a notebook or something?
What, dear?
Did you have to carry around a notebook?
Did I what?
Did you have to carry around a notebook or something?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I carried a good little planner with me.
Did you remember ABCs and numbers?
Yes.
Well, that's good. Did you know how to read?
Oh, yes.
So you knew how to... Those things didn't go away.
No. No, bicycle riding and all those things were still there. But it was knowledge of things that got erased. And I'll share with you that I think that my loss of memory had to do largely with negative thinking. And
really?
Yes. And I was saying things to myself because I was overloaded. I was saying things to myself, I can't stand something or other, or I can't take something or other. I'd never been like that before. And I think the little part of my computer brain that was hearing all this negative stuff one day said, "Oh, you want us to pull the plug." And that's what happened. The little switch got thrown, and my memory was scuttled.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But similar to the business of feeling that I could trust somebody or that I loved somebody or whatever, when something would come up that I hadn't dealt with since I'd lost my memory, I would get a feeling. And whatever that feeling was, I'd hold it. And I'd ask my wife to tell me some details about whatever the subject was. And so she would tell me things that came to her mind, and I'd start asking her questions about the things she was telling me. And the next thing I knew, I would have like a two-dimensional picture in front of me, like on a screen. And it would be a still photo. And I'd hold the feeling, and I would study that still photo, but I would continue to ask questions and get the energy of new information going in my mind. And the next thing I would know, I'd be inside like a box, like about a 5-foot cube of a box that was open on the outside. I'd go from the two-dimensional picture into this box. So now I was in a three-dimensional space, the sides and bottom and top of which contained the information I was looking for. And bip, I would know facts, figures, dates, quantities, names. I'd know things that I'd forgotten before I lost my memory.
And how long was this after it happened? If you could do that?
Was that probably
after your epiphany or before the epiphany?
After.
How did you learn to do? I mean, what made you decide to do that? How did you figure out to do that?
I don't think that any of these things are decisions. But they were me taking and using everything I had. Because one thing for sure, I wanted to get better. And the only way I could do it would be a step at a time. I had to build my way back. And by now I had enough experience of not knowing things that anything that I could learn that would help me relearn or remember, I wanted to build on those little bits and blips of patterns. And it wasn't too long after that that I got past the little two-dimensional screen and past the box, if I just thought hard about something and discussed it with my wife or my younger brother, who I was lucky, I had my younger brother who knew all my early life and my wife who knew all my adult life, because we've been married by this stage again about 45 years. And going back and visiting old neighborhoods, the schools I'd gone to and houses I'd lived in, all these things helped to start recreating my memories. And I'd wake up in the morning remembering things that I'd been seeking the night before but hadn't known when I went to sleep. And so from then on, lots of surface memories started to come back. But technical things, I had developed formulas for all kinds of products, and they were complex formulas. I would look at those, and none of the words or anything about the structuring of them meant a thing to me. And those things I had to relearn on my own. They were processes that I had developed on my own initially, and I had to develop them again. But I reacquired that ability.
Wow. I have to ask you this question. I know everybody's dying to know this. How did it affect your personal life with your wife? I mean, one night you go to bed with this woman that you love, and the next night you have no idea who it is.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, I'm lucky. I got a wonderful wife, and we were lucky that we had worked together, building businesses together and raising our kids together and all, more than most families in America today get to have that kind of time together. We jokingly call our business our family farm, because you know our kids could come by after school, and our employees would you know joke around with them and help take care of them and keep them out of trouble. And so we were not strangers to each other, and we were very, thank goodness, very close. So I think it must have been very hard for Nancy, but in that respect, it was not hard for me, because I was surrounded by all this love.
Interesting. This is the wildest story I've ever heard. It's hard to fathom, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
And our kids and their children were all just more than supportive. I really truly think that it was love that saved me.
So how long did it take from beginning to end, from the day you lost it to the day that you kind of felt normal again?
Well, oddly enough, I always felt normal, because all along the way, I was me. And it's just that I was me trying to deal with some things that were new to me, totally new. There was something there I wanted to share, and I lost it. There are still, you know, volumes of things that I haven't remembered yet. Today, I just sat in amazement while my wife showed photographs that I'd taken in Spain years ago, and was telling friends who are going to Spain about the architecture and the cities. And for me, it was like I was seeing these things for the first time. And I loved the photographs that she and I had taken. but it's just an ongoing process, I guess is the point. I should tell you a funny thing about memory. One of the things I've come to believe about memory is that it's not a thing that's inside us. I think it's electrochemical, and this is just me talking, but my memory, whenever I would really try hard to reach something that was in the shadows, that place of shadows was back behind my head, maybe 6 or 8 inches or a foot, but it was behind my head.
I understand exactly what you're talking about.
And so while I was trying to remember, it's like my focus would go back into this space behind my head. And there, if I could find an old dusty filing cabinet, if I could get a drawer open, get a file folder out of it and get it open, there I could find the information I was looking for.
That's kind of interesting, because when I read, it's the exact opposite for me, because I see into the future about people's health. And I see it about 6 or 8 inches in front of my forehead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you see your past about 6 or 8 inches behind your head. That's kind of interesting. What are you waiting on to write a book about this? It's amazing, Duane. I mean, I'm so thankful today they went, okay, Eva, you have to ask him about his life. I have never, ever done that in a reading before. Ever. Not even one time.
Well, I know that I got excited when I read about you coming to visit Kansas City. I saw your picture and I immediately related to you, and I thought, well, this is a woman that I want to hear speak.
I'm so glad we connected. You have such an amazing story. What are you waiting on? Write a book.
Well, I will do that.
I'll help you get it published.
All right.
Just get it down on paper.
All right. Let's do it.
And I told you today I want you to keep in touch with me. I mean, this is just amazing to me. The experiences that are so similar that we've had, you know. But not that memory thing. I certainly haven't had that. All right, you got just a minute. If you could say anything that you wanted to, that you thought would or could make a difference in the world, what would it be?
Well... just stay close to yourself and your loved ones, because I think that's what our lives are built on. I know that that's what saved me.
You're a blessing to my life, Duane.
Thank you
a lot.
Thank you, Eva.
And keep in touch with me, okay? And I'll send you a link to your interview so you can share it with your friends if you want.
Great.
Until my producer gets it posted.
Well, thanks so much.
Agape to you, my friend, and good night.
And you, Eva. Good night.